Great, thank you. It's really special to be back with the New Life Church family this morning. On my first visit to you back in June, it was such a joy to be given an open theme and to have the margin in life to be able to spend much time waiting on God for what I felt he wanted me to bring to you. What God nudged me to speak on then was your name in my talk that I entitled New Life Church, A Place to Bloom, Flourish and Thrive. When I finish delivering my preaches, I always rip up and bin my notes because I have the printed version of my finished talk to refer to. However, I found with my New Life preach that although I did pack a lot of material in, there was more that God gave me that I just couldn't include time-wise. In the following days, when I was tidying everything up from Johnny's study, which I had commandeered for preach prep and typing up, I stood with my sheaf of notes in my hand, knowing that there was more material held within them, and felt God nudge me to keep them filed safely away in the hope that I might have the chance to come back and do part two. It's the first time that I've ever felt led to refrain from binning my preach notes. So today I'm delighted to bring to you part two, also based on your name, which I have entitled To Be Yet Kind of People, Those Who Choose Hope. The term new life speaks to me of fresh, of different, of growth, of green shoots of promise. What I want to explore this morning are the obstacles and things that we often have to navigate in order to discover and embrace the wonder and beauty of new life in all of its fullness. The first obstacle that I want to think about is a tendency that we might have to look back over our shoulders at what we see as the glory days, how things were, and wish somehow that we could go back to the old rather than embracing the new of the here and now. Beth Moore, whose Bible studies I've been leading in my home for several years now, published a phenomenal book called Chasing Vines in February 2020, a month before COVID shut the world down. In her chapter on roots, these are the prescient comments that she made about how we can sometimes hanker after our past. Unwanted changes occur, crises happen, catastrophes invade our days without warning. When we're going through a difficult season, wouldn't the best news of all be that life would simply go back to normal someday? What we yearn for is normalcy. We don't tend to ask for the moon when we've lost all that we've known. We just want some semblance of our old lives back. The hard truth is there's no going back, but once we get up again, there can be a going forward. In his faithfulness, God sees to it that what we thought was the end isn't the end at all. And eventually, we realise that we've transitioned into a new normal. I say to you that none of us can go back to the then, whatever then means to you. But every single one of us can make the most of our now. Beth Moore goes on to say, you don't want to grow something new. You want to return to your old life. But in time, finding fruitfulness again will make more difference than you can imagine. If we can't have our treasured yesterday back, at least tomorrow can matter. The wonder of fruit bearing is that something meaningful can come from the meanest of seasons. What we endured matters. I would even go as far as to change the word tomorrow into today on this page from her book. Our yesterdays are past, but our todays can always be made to matter to us. There's a wonderful African proverb that says, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The second best time is today. Yesterday has long gone, and none of us can go back to it. But let each of us choose to make our today count. Something else I think we have to navigate in order to press into the wonder and beauty of new life that also involves looking back is held in a verse I shared with you last time from Job 14, which reads, in relation to a tree, its roots may grow old in the ground and its stump die in the soil. Yet, at the scent of water, it will bud and put forth shoots like a plant. What if our looking back before the much needed rain falls on our desert places before we have the benefit of hindsight is on a landscape literally littered with the stumps of where our dreams died, a place where things didn't turn out like we thought or hoped that they would. Although it isn't a place that we would ever want to go back to, we can nevertheless so often remain in that position of looking back over our shoulder, frozen in time, full of regrets. In his important book, Invest Your Disappointments, Paul Ballard asks a pressing question. We cannot avoid disappointment, but how do we avoid being paralysed by it? Personally, I've seen many people paralysed by disappointments in their life, chained by regrets, and I'm sure that you have too. In God on Mute, Pete Gregg makes this sober observation. Many people today are quietly downgrading their belief in miracles because they have experienced deep disappointments. Are you one of them? Are you someone who has given up on even sensing the scent of water coming on the air, never mind the rains in your desert places, because of your experience of crushing disappointment? May Isaiah 43, verses 18 and 19 become a possibility and a part of your lived experience in the weeks that stretch ahead of you, rather than you unhelpfully dwelling on the ones that lie behind you. Forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I am making a way in the desert and streams in the wasteland. The next tricky obstacle that I want to talk about navigating in order to discover the wonder and beauty of new life is when we're blindsided by the unexpected, when change stops us in our tracks and we can see no way around. I love this plant that I've had hanging in my kitchen for several years now. Grow where you are planted. It reminds me of what Paul inspirationally wrote to the Philippians, not when everything was going smoothly and was plain sailing, but instead while under house arrest and awaiting trial. Here are the words of a transformed Saul, a captive now in Rome with an uncertain future ahead of him, who was still able to grow where he was planted. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. Sometimes we don't like the family, job, neighbourhood, community, etc., where we are planted. Sometimes our place is defined by or rocked by challenging circumstances that we often never expected. Since COVID and through my job as an exam invigilator in a Western school, I've noticed that developing resilience and giving students a variety of strategies to employ when up against troubles has become an even higher priority in educational settings. The dictionary definition of resilience is the capacity to withstand or to recover quickly from difficulties. I pray that we all become better at withstanding challenges and the unexpected, that we aren't so easily blindsided by tough circumstances. In her book, The Skies I'm Under, Rachel Wright has earned the right, I feel, through very painful experiences, to bravely declare this. But what I have come to believe is that goodness can be found in every situation. That doesn't make every situation good, nor am I belittling the pain and sorrow of hard experiences. What I mean is, in the dark places, light has the biggest impact. When the cloak of darkness feels impenetrable, God is still there. Some of his greatest work is found in the darkness. She goes on to courageously say this about her journey. The most challenging paths lead us to the most beautiful scenery. Often, you simply can't get there any other way. In the book Shattered that she co-wrote with her husband Tim, she includes a wonderful piece about white bluebells. and how when a bluebell bulb is developing and splitting underground, if it is traumatised in some way, the trauma causes a mutation, changing the bulb forever. When the flower opens the following spring, instead of being blue, it appears perfectly white. Rachel writes, "The changes endured by the bluebell mattered. Its history matters and has brought about lasting, beautiful change." Although it was a few years ago now, I still remember when Stuart North, a key leader at Ebbi, said this in one of his preaches, "A calm sea doesn't make for a skilled sailor." For every one of us here, our experiences have shaped who we are. I believe so strongly that we have to choose to learn from them, and right there, slap bang in the centre of them, we have to intentionally choose to grow in the places where we have been planted. Even at those times when our planted places seem hopeless and behind us stretch the Job stumps, where our dreams have seemingly died, let us, like I say in my title today, choose to hold on to hope. Back in June, I showed you this picture of the sycamore gap tree next to Hadrian's Wall, followed by this one of the seemingly irredeemable stump where it had been mindlessly cut down. I told you how within hours, horticulturalist Rachel Riva was carefully collecting young twigs with buds from the damaged tree before sending them on to Hexham Post Office to the National Trust's secret centre in Devon, where weeks later, footage from time-lapse cameras showed seedlings grown from that stump, breaking up through the soil. In the middle of September, there was an update on the national news about those seedlings, how they'd strengthened and grown, and the following announcement was made. 49 sycamore gap saplings will be awarded to individuals, groups, and organisations. They will be planted in publicly accessible community places across the UK. Each of these 49 saplings will carry a message of hope and regeneration. What an inspirational picture that is for us today, from one stump. Saplings that will bring hope and regeneration to 49 different communities from one stump. Across the country, 49 saplings growing and blessing others where they are planted. With God, I believe that it's never over till it's over. With God, even our stumps can live again. Let us always be those who choose to hold on to hope. Following on from these previous points, I now want to explore when it's not a case of us hankering after the past or even being sad about how our past has turned out. What about when we certainly don't want the old life back to any sort of degree? What about when what we actually want is a different life from our current one? What if our problem is with our present rather than with our past? I wonder when I say to you that I'm about to share the first four words from Habakkuk 1 verse 2, if there's anyone here who not only knows what those four words are, but who also knows only too well what it is to live those words, which are, "How long, O Lord?" I think that there is such a power in being prepared to ask God our difficult questions, a true strength in being prepared to wrestle with God over those things that we just don't understand. I see Habakkuk's cry of "How long, O Lord?" as being one of lament and an anguished, heartfelt cry that demands answers from his God of love. In her brilliant book, God Among the Ruins, in a chapter entitled Wounded Ragings, Mags Duggan writes this: "The practice of lament has been described as the most profound demonstration of trust in a loving God, because it demonstrates an unwillingness to let go of God, no matter how awful the situation. Lament is the opposite of despair, which gives up on hope that something can be done, that believes that God is uninvolved and cannot be reached. Lament hooks into God with hope and desperation and trust, and hangs on. I say to you this morning that we mustn't let our pain, our bafflement, our anger ever silence us. We must continue to demand God's answers to our heartbreaking questions. We must trust him enough to continue with our wounded raging. Max Duggan goes on to say this: we may have stuffed the pockets of our hearts with rage, fear, hopelessness, despair, desires, and a welter of other emotions. And those pockets may need emptying in God's presence. I can't sum up the benefit of doing this any more profoundly than Susan Lenkes does in this piece of poetry in her book, When Life Takes What Matters. Questions, pain, and stabbing anger can be poured out to the Infinite One, and he will not be damaged. Our wounded raging will be lost in him, and we will be found. For we beat on his chest from within the circle of his arms. What can we actually do with the rubbish of our present that will eventually lead us to discover the wonder and beauty of new life in our tomorrows? You might be surprised to hear that in the women's Bible study group that I lead, amongst my friends and at women's conferences I've spoken at, the subject that I'm going to speak about next is the one that people most closely associate with me. It's what I'm known for, in fact. This is something that I'm absolutely passionate about. It's transformational, I believe. And where the nurturing and cultivating of produce in the soil of our lives is concerned, it can be a total game changer. It is, quite simply, the impact and the use for fruitful good of manure. I think that this page in Beth Moore's book, Chasing Vines, gets to the nub of it. Nobody told me a productive life would involve quite so much manure. This is what she includes in her chapter on it. From my personal experience and observation, there are plenty of people willing to provide the manure for you. Sometimes it's just a shovel full here and there, and other times you'll feel like a truck just unloaded on you. At first, the manure that gets heaped on you will appear to have no value at all. You won't seem to learn a thing from it, except perhaps that people can be cruel. You'll go through an ordeal or an attack, an assessment or a critique that even years later you will think had no constructive element whatsoever. It just seems meaningless. But it's not. It's manure. Beth goes on to recommend that when we find a load of unasked for, unwarranted, unwelcome manure unceremoniously dumped on our doorsteps, what we do with it is we metaphorically wheelbarrow it out into our gardens and dig it into our borders or put it around the bases of our fruit trees. When amazing fruit is produced over the following years, we can remember that that manure, that very manure, enriched it and helped make it what it is. I think that each of us needs to be prepared to intentionally compost our pain, to make it count, to not let it be wasted. Sometimes it may feel easier to leave manure where it is, to have nothing to do with it, to give it a wide berth and hope that it just goes away. But it doesn't go away. By choosing bravely to do something constructive with it, by using it to make the growing areas of our lives more fertile than they would have been without it, is, I think, like this sweatshirt that a teenager at Ebbe wears. It's the fruitfulness that comes from our God's upside-down kingdom. I will tell the following story with the blessing of the person it's about. Back in November 2020, on a Saturday afternoon, after I'd spoken about the power and impact of manure at a women's conference in Torquay, a hurting woman brought to the conference by a Bristol friend approached me with her eyes full of tears. The first words that she spoke were that it felt like a dump truck of manure had just been dumped on her doorstep. She proceeded to tell me about the painful marriage breakdown she was going through and asked for me to pray for her to dig the manure in to make it count in her life. Fast forward to January 2023, and God had very clearly nudged me to invite Sue along to my next Beth Moore study. Over the following weeks, as we studied God's word for us today, we all witnessed Sue emerge, a green shoot or a white bluebell, perhaps, from the intentionally dug-in manure of her circumstances. She's blossomed and thrived ever since. Only two Fridays ago in our James study, one of my ladies looked up and said to Sue how she remembers her so vividly from when I introduced her on that first session, and how she's now completely transformed. Even her face has changed and become radiant. In the corner of the day room where we discuss our weekly homework stands in pride of place a painting I framed that Sue painted for me at the end of her first study to remind me and to thank me for showing her that beautiful things can and do grow out of our intentionally dug-in manure. Over the coming weeks, is it time for you to get out your wheelbarrow and your shovel? Is it time for you to choose to find ways to constructively compost your pain? Time doesn't allow me to expand, but I must say at this juncture that something I believe God does to help us navigate the pain of our present that often leads to wonderful produce in our lives is that he brings empathetic, loving people to stand shoulder to shoulder next to us in our troubles. In his book, God on Mute, Pete Gregg describes an experiment carried out in Wisconsin's Center for the Study of Pain, where volunteers were timed to see how long they could keep their feet in buckets of freezing water. The researchers discovered this remarkable thing, that when a companion was allowed in to sit next to them, the volunteers could endure the cold for twice as long, which led the researchers to write this: the presence of another caring person doubles the amount of pain that we can endure. At the end of a recent EBI service, Esther Legbag, one of our key leaders, had a prophetic picture of God stood at the doors at the back of church, and up the central aisle she saw obstacles and the rubbish of life blocking people's path through to him. In her mind's eye, she saw Jesus coming along and quietly moving the obstacles out of the way. Then, joining him, were members of the congregation helping to move the rubbish so that nothing was stopping people from connecting with God. What a wonderful picture. It reminds me of the paralyzed man in Mark 2, a man who had friends who didn't want him remaining on a stretcher for the rest of his life. Friends who wanted to get him to Jesus, who wanted him to know what it was to walk. Friends who were prepared to struggle to hoist him and remove the obstacle of a roof in order to get him right in front of Jesus so that he could be healed. Maybe you are someone only here today because you too had friends who were prepared to lift you, to carry you, to move things out of your way, and who then used love's ropes to let you down in front of Jesus, right where you needed to be. I think that Mags Duggan was so right when she wrote, walking with someone through the earthquakes, the blizzards, the ruined places of their lives is not for the faint-hearted, but it is for those whose hearts are so touched by God with the hurt and grief of others that it moves them into the storm. The desert places the wilderness of another's life. It is for those who are willing to sit with the broken in the rubble of their dreams and the heartache of their losses, to sit with them and in that place to incarnate the love and the compassion and the hope of God. Which leads me straight into my last section in this talk that I entitled To Be Yet Kind of People, Those Who Choose Hope. I wonder what choosing hope looks like to you. Amongst my favourite books are C.S. Lewis's, and in preparing for today, I was thinking of that moment in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe that speaks to me so much of hope, in the land of Narnia, where it was always winter, but heartbreakingly never Christmas. Three of the Pevensey children have unexpectedly come across Father Christmas, who hands out presents to them. Shortly after he departs, the children hear rumours that Aslan is on the move. And suddenly all around them is the sound of water dripping off of trees as the snow melts, and they know that spring is on the way. Winter will soon be over. To illustrate this, a month ago I took a photo to show our storage box, still covered in a thick frost because it was in shadow, whereas water droplets were forming on the nearby tree because it was in the sun. When I saw later that I'd captured a rainbow ending right there on the decking where I do much of my preach prep and studies, I thought about how hope is often hanging for dear life onto God's promises to us. I think that Paul Mallard was right when he wrote in Invest Your Disappointments, God calls us to trust him in the dark, based on what we have learned in the light. It reads in Hebrews 13, verse 5 in the Amplified Bible that God promises us, I will never, under any circumstances, desert you, nor give you up, nor leave you without support, nor will I in any degree leave you helpless or let you down. Maybe someone needs to hear that today. Although hope looks towards tomorrow, I think that we also need to know what it looks like here in our present times. In Hebrews 6, hope is described as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. Yet, as Habakkuk knew only too well, the present can be an insecure place, a troubling place. Max Duggan writes reassuringly in God Among the Ruins, there are places in the present which question belief in a loving God, unmet expectations, unrealised dreams, unanswered prayers. All of these can conspire to rob us of our trust, our hope in the love of God. What we need to know when we are standing in our own ruins is that we don't need to stand alone. Whatever the circumstances might be telling us, God is with us. God is present with us. Always. So true. Unfortunately, what troubles, disappointments, trials can so often do is make us feel that God has abandoned us. They block up our ears to hearing God's promises spoken to us. In preparing for today, it dawned on me that what Romans 8, verse 35 onwards doesn't say is that troubles, hardship, persecution, famine, heights and depths can't separate us from God. What it actually says is that they can't separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus. Psalm 130, verse 7 reads, hope in the Lord, for with the Lord is unfailing love. Today, know that nothing can stop God from loving you, despite what your present circumstances might say at the moment. I believe that hope is a choice and also that it's intertwined with faith. In Hebrews 11, verse 1 in the ESV, it reads, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Sometimes it's hard to hold on to hope when we can't see ahead of us, when the darkness closes in, In the midst of his suffering, Job knew all about the reach of his God, who gave him songs in the night when his darkness was enveloping him. In his inspirational book, 10,000 Reasons, Matt Redman writes, "Anyone can sing during the daytime when life is all brightness and ease. When there's peace and prosperity, when the people we love are healthy and the plans that we have made look as though they're in line with God's will, it's not so hard to raise a hand. But can we still find our way to the place of praise when the sun goes down and in spite of the darkness? Can we offer up a song in the night? I believe that this is what hope does." Habakkuk hadn't had answers to his heart-rending questions by the end of the book. In fact, the olive crop has failed. There are no figs or grapes on the vine, no sheep in the pen or cattle in the stalls. Yet, this is how Habakkuk chooses hope in his penultimate verse. Yet, I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God, my Saviour. God, help us to be yet kind of people, those who choose hope. Let me leave you with the image of an incredible oil painting titled Hope by George Frederick Watts, painted in 1886, not long after his granddaughter had died. The woman in it is stranded, blindfolded on a mountaintop. She can't see her future. Her lyre has only one string remaining, but what she's doing is bending in so close to hear the music that it makes. Hope choosing to compose songs in her nighttime with that which remains. I recently read about a preacher who said to a group of budding worship songwriters, "Don't just tell us things are amazing. Tell us amazing things." Today, I haven't told you that things are amazing, either in your past or in your present times. Today, I hope that what I have told you is to hang on to hope, whatever your circumstances, to grow, blossom, thrive where you are planted, whether you like it there or whether you don't. That your stump can still bud. To choose to compost your pain, to make it matter, to not let it be wasted. To always lean in and listen to the music and beauty of maybe your last remaining string. And to play it. Play it with everything you've got. And lastly, I say to you today, may each one of us still be singing when the evening comes. Amen.